Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is July the 8th. We are in Shmuel Beis, Perek Chav, Chapter 20, Pasuk, Yud Gimel, Verse 13. So we'll start with you, Dalal. We'll start with 14. Okay. So Sheva ben Bichri is continuing the rebellion. He's trying to take over. He wants people to follow him instead of David. He has been somewhat successful in gathering some support. He is from Binyamin. And he is... So David sent Amasa to go gather the army, but Amasa delayed in coming back. And as a result, David sent Avishai with the palace guard. And when Amasa finally made it back, Yoav killed him. And now the army is going with Yoav to run after Sheva ben Bichri. So Pasuk Gedal, verse 14, Vayavar b'chol shivte Yisrael, and he, meaning Sheva ben Bichri, passed through all of the tribes of Yisrael, Avela, going to the place called Avel, which is a city, Ubeis Macha, v'chol ha-beirim, he went to Beis Macha, which is another place, and all of the Beirim, which is also a place, Rashi doesn't know where that is. Vayikalahu vayavohu afacharav, and they gathered and they came after him. So Sheva ben Bichri has gathered a group, and meanwhile, the Yoav with the army of Yehuda is in pursuit. Vayavo, when they came, vayatsuru alav be'avela, beis hamacha, and they laid siege on him, to him, in Avel, which was in the area of Beis Ma'acha. So there's this city called Avel, and that is where Sheva ben Bichri was. Yoav caught up with him there, and Yoav surrounded the city, and he's got him trapped. Now, the Navi doesn't give us the details of the chase, of what must have been some skirmishes, or whatever was going on. All the Navi gives us is the final act in this war, in this battle. And Yoav has Sheva ben Bichri on the ropes in a city surrounded, and he has laid siege to the city. So I'm sure there could have been some very interesting discussion of the various battle skirmishes, strategies that went on, but whatever it is, the Navi does not feel that it is significant to report that, and instead jumps ahead to the final battle, which is a city of Avel, which has a double wall around it. It's a very strong fortified city, and Yoav has surrounded the city. Vayishbechu solela el ha'ir, and they poured there's a word for this in English.
It says mound.
A mound. What they do is when a city,
yeah,
you know, when they laid siege. What's that?
I know what you mean. I've seen this kind of thing.
Yeah. So when there's a walled city and they're trying to fight the city, what they do is they pour dirt. They excavate dirt from another place and pour it around the city so that they can then go up on top of that mound of dirt and therefore be overlooking the wall, or at least be equal to the wall. And it gives the people on the outside an advantage. Meanwhile, of course, the people on the inside are trying to prevent that by shooting them and, you know, trying to prevent that from happening. So they did manage to put up this solala, this mound around the city. Batamod Bachel, and they actually got into the inner wall. They got through the outer wall, and now Yoav's army is on the inner wall. So it's really the last act. They're really about to completely sack the city. V'chol ha'am asher es Yoav mashchisim lahapil achoma, and all the nation that was with Yoav were destroying to knock down the wall. They were ready to completely knock down this wall and then to decimate the city that is harboring this Sheva ben Bichri, who is the last... this last vestige of rebellion against David. So, left as is, what would have happened is that the army of David, of Yehuda, led by Yoav, would have eventually broken down this inner wall, and they would have then destroyed the city, because the city is harboring Sheva ben Bichri, and they are all considered to be part of the rebellion, because that's where Sheva ben Bichri is. But there's going to be an intervention. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam
Shehakol Nivra.
And starting with Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, we have one of the most interesting characters in all of Tanakh. One of the most fascinating characters in all of Tanakh appears. We haven't seen her in many, many years. But she appears over here, out of nowhere. And her intervention is a fascinating one. And from her intervention, we derive a significant halacha, a significant Torah law, which actually is very significantly debated in the Gemara, of exactly what do we derive from her behavior over here. Vatikra isha chachama min ha'ir, and a wise woman called out from the city. And the Navi doesn't tell us who it was. Just all we know about her is that she's a wise woman. So a wise woman called out from the city. Shimu, shimu, listen, listen. Imru na el Yoav, please say now to Yoav. Keravat hena, come close to here. Va'adabra ilach, and I will speak to you. So this wise woman calls out from the city to the army that they should summon Yoav for her to speak to. Va'ikra ve'leha, he came close to her. So she's, you have to picture her up on top of the wall, or at least peering over the wall, and he's at the bottom of the wall, and he gets close. Now that's a dangerous thing to do. Do you recall someone who got too close to the wall and was killed? We had it in Shmuel, actually. And there's another person that was referenced over there that happened in Shoftim. The person in Shmuel...
I missed that particular... I know that's when they laid siege to a city,
yeah,
right?
And, yeah. That's how Uriah Hachiti was killed. Yeah. Uriah Hachiti was killed by getting too close to the wall. And when David... when Yoav anticipates David's complaint about people getting close to the wall, getting killed, he references what happened to Gidon's son, who was also killed by getting in Sefer Shoftim, who got too close to the wall. I believe that's who it was. So Yoav does come close over here, apparently believing her sincerity. Vatomer Haisha, and the woman said to him, Ha'ata Yoav, are you Yoav? Vayomer Ani, he said, I am. Vatomer lo, and she said to him, Shma divrei amasecha, listen to the words of your maidservant. Vayomer, he said, Shomei anochi, I'm listening. Now, that's a funny exchange. I mean, it's almost like pleasantries. You know, good morning, good morning. How you doing? You know, are you Yoav? Yes, I am. Listen to the words of your maidservant. I'm listening. So Chazal tell us that she said to him, are you Yoav, about whom it says, now we haven't gotten to this verse yet, it's going to be later on in Sefer Shmuel, about whom it says, Yoshev b'sheves tach kemoni, which we will learn later means that Yoav was the Av Bezdin, was the head of the Sanhedrin. Yoav's scholarship was, I wouldn't say it's unparalleled, but it was of the greatest in all of the Jewish people. So she was saying to him, are you Yoav, about whom it says that you're one of the greatest Torah sages of our generation? And he said, I am Yoav. So she said, listen to the words of your maidservant. He said, I'm listening. Now, if she said to him, are you Yoav, about whom it says you're one of the greatest sages of the generation, that gets Yoav's attention, because clearly she's going to challenge him on that. Right. You don't ask somebody, are you of the greatest physicists, unless you intend to challenge them on something to do with physics. Right. You're setting them up. So she's setting him up, and he realizes that. And she's saying to him, are you the one about whom it says that you're of the greatest Torah sages? So he says, that's me. So she says, okay, listen then to the words of your maidservant. So he says, well, I'm listening. You got my attention.
Is this Sarah?
Yeah, that's who it is. That's what it is. Hold on. Vatomer Lamar, and she said, saying, which means, quote, Daber yedabru varishona Lamar. They speak in the beginning, saying. Shaul Yeshalu Be'avel. They ask in Avel. V'chein Heisamu. And so they would make peace. Heisamu from the word tam, as in simplicity or completeness, right? So what does this mean? So she said to him, doesn't the Torah say that before you attack a city, you should open with peace? Daber yedabru varishona, lemar. Aren't you supposed to say something before you attack the city? Doesn't the Torah say first to ask if the city will submit to you in peace? Had you done so, Shaul Yeshalu Ba'avel, had you asked about the city of Avel in peace, V'chein Heisamo, they would have made peace with you. If you would not have laid siege, you would have simply said that, will you open your doors to me? The city would have done so. That's what she says to him. Now, why is that so simple? Sheva ben Bichri is here with an army that's on the run. Why is it so simple? So she's not done yet. And she says, Anochi Shlume Emunei Yisrael. Now the Medrash fills in over here that Yoav said to her, who are you? Who is this woman? So she says, I am Shlume Emunei Yisrael. I am the peacemaker, the faithful of Yisrael. I'm the one who makes peace amongst the faithful of Yisrael. You are trying to kill a city and a mother in Yisrael. Now that's an expression today. Ir ve'em b'Yisrael is meant to mean like an old established Jewish city. It's called an ir ve'em b'Yisrael. A city, a mother of Yisrael. But that's not what the Medrash says here. The way the Medrash says it is, you want to kill a city and a mother of Yisrael. That's me. I'm a mother of Yisrael that you want to kill. Lama sevala nachalas Hashem. Why should you swallow the portion and the inheritance of Hashem? So why are you doing this? You want to destroy a city. All you had to do is ask for peace, and there would have been peace. Vayan Yoav vayomar. Yoav answered, and he said, Chalila chalila li. Well, we know chas v'chalila, right? But chalila means it should be profane to say such a thing, and he says it double. Chalila for me, chalila for my master David to do such a thing. This would never happen. Imavala v'imashkis, if I will swallow and destroy. Lo chena davar, that is not the case. Ki ish mehar Ephraim, there is a man from the mountain of Ephraim. Sheva ben Bichri Shemo. His name is Sheva ben Bichri. Nasa yado b'melech b'David. He raised his hand against the king, against David. Tenu oso levado, which, I'm sorry, the Chazal tell us, he raised his hand against the king, which is reason enough to kill him. And he raised his hand against David, which even if David were not the king, because David is such a Talmud Chacham of such stature, therefore he deserves to die just for raising his hand against David, even if David were not king. Certainly because David is king. Tnu oso levado, give him over by himself, just him, ve'al chomei al ha'ir, and I will leave the city. Just give me him, and that's it, and the city will be spared. Vatomer ha'isha al Yoav, the woman said to Yoav, Hine rosho mushlach elecha be'arachoma, behold, his head will be sent to you over the wall. The Medrash says, how did she know? How could she be so sure? Now, we're going to see that she's going to be able to successfully behead Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri was a powerful warrior. And she says, I'm going to hand you his head. It'll be handed over the wall. How was she so sure? Now we're going to see that because of her wisdom, her being confident about it is different than us being confident about it. And she has a lot of talent, as we're about to see. But what the Medrash is asking is how does she know for certain that she could say that? Maybe she'll fail in her endeavors in trying to get him killed. So the Medrash says once she found out that Sheva ben Bichri had rebelled against David, she knew for certain that Hashem would not allow her to fail in her attempt to get his head cut off. She was confident because she knew that it is the correct thing to do. And therefore she was 100% sure she'll be able to do this.
But she's not a young woman at this point.
No, she's not a young woman. And the woman came to all of the nation, meaning of in the city of Avel, with her wisdom. The Navi doesn't tell us all of the wisdom, but the Medrash fills it in. And they cut off the head of Sheva ben Bichri. And they sent it to Yoav. And Yoav blew on the shofar. And they scattered from upon the city, each man to his tent. And Yoav returned to Yerushalayim to the king.
So she saved the city.
She saved the whole city from destruction with her wisdom. Now, as Mrs. Starkman already gave it away, this is Serach Bas Asher. Serach, the daughter of Asher, who is mentioned for the first time in Parshas Vayigash, when the 70 souls of the Jewish people who went down to Egypt are counted. Serach Bas Asher is one of the two women mentioned, other than the actual Imahos. She's one of the two women mentioned, and one of the three women that we know of. In other words, the Pasuk mentions Dina, and it mentions Serach. Those are the ones mentioned. We also are aware that Yocheved was born as they entered Egypt. It is well known that when you count up the names over there, you only get 69, not 70. But the Gemara tells us that Yocheved completed the number when she was born as they entered Egypt. That is only one opinion in the Medrash. There are other opinions how to fill in that 70th soul. One wants to say that Yaakov is the 70th soul. One wants to say Hashem himself counts as the 70th or the first of the 70. There's an opinion that says Serach Bas Asher, because of her incredible wisdom, counted like two people. And she was counted as two people because of you could say her length, her lifetime spans so many lifetimes. She's not just one person, but she's clearly a multifaceted, very talented, very wise person to be counted like that. But this is Serach Bas Asher. The Medrash also tells us that when you say the chapter, we call it a song, but it's really the last chapter of Mishlei, of Proverbs, the song of Eshes Chayil, woman of valor, that we sing on Friday night. When you say the verse Piha Pascha VeChachma, her mouth opens in wisdom. That is referring to Serach Bas Asher. Serach Bas Asher stands out as the wise woman. Many of the women that are referenced over there in Eshes Chayil were wise. But if you want to know who has the title, the wise woman is Serach Bas Asher, to the point where, over here, her name isn't mentioned. But we know it is her, because she is called the wise woman. And with her wisdom, she saved the city. Now, we have to discuss, of course, what she did, how she did it, what the whole conversation is between her and Yoav.
How old would she be?
So she would be, at this point, the period of time from the time, well, let's date it backwards, from the time they got into Israel until the Beis HaMikdash was built is going to be 440 years, I believe. That's what it is. I think it's 440 years. Now, this is not yet the time of the Beis HaMikdash. It's towards the end of David's life. So we have to shave off around 20 years or so. So we're down to 420 years. Now, then you have to add the 40 years of the wandering in the Midbar.
So we're up to 460.
460. And then add 210 years that they were in Egypt.
870.
So 670.
Well, she wasn't zero when
right.
I got there.
So she's approximately 700 years
can
old.
Can this really be? I mean, I understand that the Medrash says this.
So the Mefarshim on the Medrash say, I saw it today, one of them actually says, someone asked, how could it be Sarah? How could she be this old? So he says, listen, once you're living over past what normal people live, whatever normal is, then it doesn't matter where you put the number. In other words,
once, let's say for our day and age, we don't know anybody who lives, you know, to 150 years old. So what's the difference if they live to be 150 or 250? It's the same thing.
Yeah. Right. I think that doesn't hold much for we have a tradition that when Moshe ended his life at 120, that was more or less, you know.
Yeah, we say 120 because of that, but there's no real source for that. The Ramban writes that in his vikuach, in the Ramban's debate with the Christians. That was the first of the great debates and the only one that we actually won. Because after that, they didn't allow us...
Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah, they didn't allow us to win after that. But the Ramban won the debate. And he won it hands down. He just wiped the floor with them. So the Ramban, and it's recorded. We have it recorded. So one of the things they asked him is that we say that Mashiach hasn't yet come. So they asked him, doesn't the Gemara say, because the person who was on their side was an apostate. Right. So he said, doesn't the Talmud say that they asked Eliyahu HaNavi, where is Mashiach at that time? And he said, he's in the gates of Rome. So Mashiach was alive at that time. So if he was alive at that time, then how could he still be alive now? It's so many years later. That's what they asked the Ramban. So the Ramban's, first of all, his answer was that when the Gemara says that, there are different ways of understanding that. He doesn't have to be alive at that, whatever it is, fine. But the Ramban says, so he lived a long time. So he's living a long time. It's all right. It's not, you can have people live a long time. It doesn't bother the Ramban. Okay, people live a long time. So we don't see it? We don't normally see it? Okay. So someone lived a long time. It's not, you know, Eliyahu HaNavi is still alive. There are people who live a long time. What is to me, the bigger question than... I don't know if Sarah Bas Asher is still alive today.
It's she never died. She went to Shema like Eliyahu.
Well, not like Eliyahu. Eliyahu is a whole different...
Okay.
Yeah. But the bigger question to me is, so where is she? In other words...
You mean today?
Yeah.
Is she still alive?
Right. So where you run into this woman, so she has no relatives, no friends. Like, how do you... Right?
Do we feel that she's still alive today?
Well
she never died.
Well, she certainly lived to be this long.
So it's another 2,000 years.
Right. I don't know.
But are you saying that we have a tradition that she's alive today?
There is a medrash that says that she would endure, she would live on. There is such a medrash like that.
Could this be explained through Gilguling?
In theory, it could be, but this seems to be the real Sarach Bas Asher.
Yeah, but if she were still alive today, and we hold that she's still alive. Of course, if we said that, then I guess all the great... You know, why would she be reincarnated if she were perfect, you know?
Okay, so hold on.
maybe I'm just way off.
Okay, but anyway. So Sarach Bas Asher here is in the city. So first let's discuss, what is this exchange between her and Yoav? Now, she doesn't realize, apparently, about Sheva ben Bichri.
Yeah, now how can that... Excuse me for interrupting.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So she knows... You couldn't be living in the city and not know that Sheva ben Bichri had entered the city and now the city was surrounded. But she didn't know that Sheva ben Bichri had mounted a rebellion. That she didn't know. That was news to her that Yoav shared with her. That she did not know. Now that means, if we think it through, that when Sheva ben Bichri entered the city, he did not make it known, and the people who were with him did not make it known, that he was rebelling against David. Which means he must have already been on the run to the point where he saw he had no chance anymore. That his rebellion had already crumbled. Because if he was still in the mode of, I'm the new king, get rid of who needs David, then everybody in the city would have heard about it as soon as he entered the city. So it seems like, at this point, again, the Navi doesn't give us all the blow-by-blow information, all the battles that took place, but by the time you get to this city over here, Sheva ben Bichri is done for. I mean, he's a fugitive with a few of his, whatever, I don't know how many there are, some of his men, but he's in this city. So Sarach Bas Asher says to Yoav, I thought you're the Av Bezdin, you're the head of the Sanhedrin. Doesn't the Torah say to ask to first ask Shalom before you attack a city. And if the Torah says, and if the city agrees to open up, then they open up and they become slaves to you. They become servants to you. That's what it says. It's talking about laying siege to a non-Jewish city. So why are you just attacking? So Yoav says, I wouldn't just attack. That's not what's going on over here. But there's a man, Shevem ben Bichri, and he raised his hand against David. So Sarach says, oh, that's what it is? I'll take care of it. We're gonna hand his head over to you.
Literally.
Now, at this point, it becomes clear what's happening, meaning that Yoav is under the impression that the city is harboring a fugitive. Mm-hmm. Yoav doesn't know that they are unaware of Sheva ben Bichri's treachery, so his assumption is they're harboring a fugitive. Therefore, they're all part of the rebellion, and therefore they all need to be killed. She says, I didn't realize that, we'll hand you his head. Now, at this point, if she goes to them and tells them what's happening, and they choose to support Sheva ben Bichri, then Yoav should destroy the whole city, because that means they're joining into the treachery. So Sarach has a tricky job now. Sarach wants to save the city. In order to save the city, she needs to marginalize Sheva ben Bichri. If she is unable to do that, not only will she not be able to hand the head over to Yoav, but that also will be a signal to Yoav that he is to destroy the city, and that's the proper thing to do, which is true, because the city is now supporting a rebellion against David HaMelech. So she then goes and she speaks to the city with her wisdom. So what did she do? So the Medrash says, this is what she did. This is, to me, I'm always so impressed with these things because we tend to oversimplify all the stories that we hear. But we're dealing with human beings. Every case, you got human beings. And human beings interact then as they interact today. They may be on a much higher level than we are, but they're still human beings, and they interact as human beings. And therefore, when you want to get something done, if you walk in like a bull in a china shop, you're not going to get it done. They're not going to accept it. People need to be brought on board. People need to be convinced. You have to have a method in order to convince people to do the right thing. It doesn't just happen by itself. And, of course, you have another side of the story, which is you have Sheva ben Bichri, who's lobbying for himself. He must have been a very charismatic person if he was able to gather people together for a rebellion. You're not talking about some guy who people naturally want nothing to do with. You're talking about someone who people do gravitate towards. Yeah. So as much as she may be trying to take his head off, he is going to be trying to garner support from the city. So I'm a victim. David did this to me. Whatever it is, whatever litany of complaints he has against the establishment, he's going to share it with the city and try to gain support. So she's got to be clever over here. So what does she do? So she goes to the people of the city, which I assume means she gets a cross section of the leadership of the city, and she says, you know, we're dealing here with the army of David HaMelech, which normally, before this time, was always used to attack non-Jews. Now, unfortunately, they're attacking us. And Yoav is in charge of this army. This is David's powerful main army. You know what they've done to everybody else they attacked? To Moab, and Ammon, and Edom, and Plisht, everybody. Nobody was able to stand up to this army. This army was able to decimate everybody. You think we stand a chance? They're going to wipe us out. So they said to her, they knew that she had a conversation with Yoav, so they said to her, well, what do they want from us? So she said, you know what? All they want is 1,000 men. If we give them 1,000 men for them to execute, they'll let us go. They'll let the rest of the city go. Just 1,000 men, that's all. It's a whole city. 1,000 men. So they said, 1,000 men? Well, that's a lot of people. But she said, but what do you mean, compared to the whole city? You want to save ourselves. So they started to mull over and say, okay, I guess what we'll do is we'll send an edict out to every family in the city, and everybody's got to give over from their family someone to be executed. You know, we got to prorate it. Mm-hmm. If there's 1,000 families, everybody's going to give over one person from the family. If there are 500 families, everybody's going to give over two people from the family. You got to figure out who you're going to have executed in your family. So she said, you know what? Let me go back and see if I can negotiate. So she went and pretended to have another conversation with Yoav. She came back and said, you know what? They said 500.
That's looking good now.
Yeah. I said, okay, all right, 500, that's better. And then they said, okay, we'll do that. And you know what? Let me try and negotiate one more time. And she went back. She came back. They said 100. And they said, okay, let's figure that out. They start the debate. Which 100 should we give over? The convicts, this, you know, they're going through. Who should we give over? You know, let me try one more time. She went back. She came back. You know, now they're only saying 10. 10. Oh, okay. They start the debate. Let me go back. And then she finally came back and she said, you know what? In the end, they really only want one person. And they're even naming who the person is. Sheva ben Bichri. And not only that, he's not a member of our city. He's some foreigner who entered our city. And he's jeopardizing everybody in the city. They said, oh, forget what, just him. And they were totally on board. They grabbed Sheva ben Bichri, they cut off his head, and they sent the head over the wall. And the army dispersed.
By the way, that mound, is that called a rampart? It
may be a rampart. I'm not sure.
Here's one of said, bug me.
Yeah.
This is captured in the Midrash?
Yeah. The Midrash goes through this whole thing.
It's like the reverse of Abraham in
exactly. Exactly. Now, here, again, I would have thought, if I'm Serach Bas Asher, hey, you got to listen to me. I'm Serach Bas Asher. I'm 700 years old.
You're not right. Not listen to me.
Listen to your elders.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do that. She recognizes you don't win that way. You can try, but you're not going to win that way. If there's strong emotions going on, you got to have a plan and you got to be clever. And she was very, very clever. She was very wise. And she devised this plan. She didn't consult with anybody. On her own, she said to Yoav, I got it. I'm taking care of it. It's under control. I'm on it. And she goes and she takes care of it. She, with her wisdom, she manages to pull this off. So that's what happens. Now I told you there's a halachic matter that comes out of this. But before we do that, I want to go back to one other thing before we touch on the halachic part of it, which is very, very important. If you go back to Pasuk Yod Tes to 19, when she's establishing who she is, her credentials, with Yoav, she says, Anochi Shlumei Emunei Yisrael. I am the one who brings peace to the faithful of Yisrael. The Gemara tells us, what does that mean? She says, I am the one who made shalom between one Ne'eman and the other Ne'eman. Between one faithful person and the other faithful person. Mm-hmm. I made shalom between Yaakov and Yosef because she's the one that went in to say, Od Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive. She figured out how to break the news to Yaakov in a way that wouldn't break him. So I brought together the Ne'eman, the faithful, Yaakov, and the Ne'eman, the faithful Yosef, that they never would have been reunited because had the news been broken to Yaakov in a way that would have broken him, he never would have been reunited with Yosef. I'm the one who facilitated that reunion. And I also brought the faithful Moshe together with the faithful, with the Ne'eman, Yosef. Because when we had to leave Egypt and they didn't know where are the bones of Yosef, I'm the one who told Moshe where the Aron of Yosef is, where the coffin is, so that we could actually leave and bring Yosef's bones with us back to Eretz Yisrael. So I brought together Yaakov and Yosef. I brought together Moshe and Yosef. That's what she says. So I am the one who brought peace between the Ne'eman and the Ne'eman. Now, a few things about this. First of all, it's an interesting way to use the word peace. Yaakov and Yosef weren't fighting. Moshe and Yosef weren't fighting. Right? So when she says, I brought peace between the Ne'eman Yaakov and the Ne'eman Yosef, she doesn't mean they were fighting with each other and brought them together. She means that she brought a peaceful relationship. She didn't stop the fighting, but she brought together two people who otherwise would have been separated. Similarly, with Moshe and Yosef, Yosef's dead. She's not bringing together two people who are fighting with each other, but she's bringing together two entities, and apparently the bones of Yosef with Moshe is something that is a relationship of some sort. There's something there. A relationship between the bones of Yosef and Moshe. They're not talking to each other. So what is that relationship? So of course, we know that Moshe knew we couldn't leave without Yosef's bones because he had made everybody swear that we will not leave until we bring his bones with us. But the bones of Yosef play a very significant role in leaving Egypt. Later on, the pasuk, the verse in Tehillim, in Psalms, says that when the sea split, it says, Hayam ra'a vayanos. The sea saw and ran away. The Medrash says, what did the sea see?
The sea saw.
The sea saw Arono shel Yosef, the coffin of Yosef. And it split. So, of course, we know there's the other measures of Nachshon ben Aminadav jumping in. It means that all these things were contributing factors. But Yosef's Aron, Yosef's coffin, was a contributing factor to the splitting of the sea. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the one who split the sea with his staff, but it was a partnership with Yosef. It was also a partnership with Nachshon ben Aminadav. We know that as well. But there is a partnership here between Moshe and the coffin of Yosef. They're working together in a certain way. Moshe is stretching out his hand over the sea, and the coffin of Yosef is there, and the sea splits. Serach Basasha brought them together. I brought the two together. I made that relationship.
There was an interesting aspect to this, which is that I was thinking that Moshe and Bnei Israel were simply obligated because of this oath to take the bones of Yosef out, and so it's in a way it's like doing chesed for the dead, you know. But in fact, according to this medrash that you're saying, Yosef himself contributed to Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, like without that particular factor it might not have happened. And maybe one of the reasons Yosef obligated people to make this oath is with some degree of Ruach HaKodesh or prophecy that, you know, they would not be able to leave. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen unless they took his bones.
It could be this. What schus was it? What merit was it that made the sea split from Yosef? It says the sea saw vayanos and ran away. When did Yosef run away?
From Potiphar's wife.
The same language. It says vayanos hachutzah. He ran outside. Yosef ran away from that temptation, and the sea ran away from Yosef. Yeah. Right? Midah k'neged midah, measure for measure. Yosef embodied living in Egypt and remaining steadfast, not being affected by the culture, not allowing himself to be assimilated. And he was tempted more than anybody else to assimilate, and he did not. And that was the merit to get out of Egypt. To get out, you have to have proven that you don't belong there. Yosef proved more than anyone that he doesn't belong there. And he, therefore, the sea split. But that's a relationship. Serach Basasha says, I brought about that relationship. Now, not mentioned over here is another thing Serach Basasha did, which is that she's the one who verified the authenticity of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu came and said, Pakod Pakanati, that Hashem has remembered us, that was the symbol, that was the sign of redemption. But they didn't know that. They didn't know that. So Serach Basasha is the one who told the elders, he's the man. That's it. He's got the code. That's him. She knows it because she's outlived everybody. So she knows. So Serach Basasha. Also, that I guess the reason why it's not mentioned over here is because it's not Moshe with a particular person, it's with the Jewish people. But she facilitates Yaakov and Yosef which is, if you think about it, the entrance into Egypt, bringing together Yaakov and Yosef, so that you have Yaakov himself coming down to Egypt, that we don't go down to Egypt without Yaakov, and Yaakov died from the news of Yosef's still being alive, then we would not have brought Yaakov with us to Egypt. He would have ended up there, which would have changed everything. He wouldn't have had the brachos. He wouldn't have had... the whole thing would have been different. So she facilitates that reunion, and Yaakov living in Mitzrayim for 17 years, which establishes the Jews in Mitzrayim on a good footing. She's the one who verifies the authenticity of Moshe Rabbeinu, who's going to take us out of Egypt. But then she also supplies that last link to get us past the sea, because that's the last barrier to get out of Egypt. We got out before then, but the sea is still in the way. The Yam Suf is still in the way. She provides that final key to get out of Egypt, and that's the bones of Yosef. So she is the facilitator, but she does it by what? By bringing people together. That's what she's good at. She knows how to do it. And we are learning from here that her method was a method that is primarily a method of chachma, of wisdom. We know that Aaron HaKohen stands for shalom. That's what he stands for. He's an ohev shalom. He loves peace. He's a rodev shalom. He chases after peace. That's Aaron. Aaron is a peace lover. He doesn't just love peace. He chases after peace. And that's why when he died, everybody cried for him, because everybody had benefited from Aaron in some way or another. You had a fight with your spouse, you had a fight with your neighbor, you had a fight with your coworker, whatever it is, Aaron was there to make everybody get along. And you all know, everybody knows, getting people to get along is not simple. It's not simple. It doesn't just take, you can't just say, I want everybody to get along with each other. Ah. That never works. Right? It takes a great deal of effort. It takes a great deal of diplomacy. You got to really work hard. And Aaron did. The emphasis on Aaron, even though the Gemara tells us that of course there was wisdom involved, but the emphasis is on the shalom. That's the emphasis. That's what he stands for. Of course, he had to use wisdom. You can't have shalom without being wise about it, without being clever, without having a plan. But what he stands for is shalom. Serach is a person who brought people together. They weren't fighting with each other, necessarily. But she brings together people, and it's through wisdom. That's what she stands for. Pi ha-pascha v'chachma. Her mouth opens with wisdom. She stands for wisdom. She has plans. How did she do it with Yaakov? Not the same way as this. With Yaakov and Yosef, you know, she came in and she was playing on her kinar, whatever that is, and she did it in a very subtle way. She was very, very subtle in how to bring about Yaakov and Yosef. And then with Moshe and with Yosef and with Moshe and the Jewish people there, she supplied information. I'm not sure how she did it. It's unclear. Some want to say that, in fact, all the Jews knew the code word of pokod pokadati. They all did. They all knew pokod pokadati. They knew what the code was. So then, when Moshe came and said pokod pokadati, how would anybody know it was him? He was the right person anyway. Anybody knew it. Yeah. But once everybody knows it, then it's not a code anymore. Right. But the one of the Mepharshim wants to say the way that they, or possibly it was Serach who figured this out, knew that Moshe was authentic is because he had a speech impediment. And he couldn't normally say the p sound. And he was able to say pakod pakadati. And if it is Serach who figured that out, then that's, she's supplying the wisdom. With Moshe and Yosef and the bones, I'm not sure what she did, if she just simply provided the information of where he is, or if there was some more cleverness or wisdom that was necessary to locate the exact spot, to give idea, whatever it was.
Somewhere it's also
to the coffin's
right
hand. Yeah, but the Medrash says Moshe did that. I'm not sure if she supplied that or he, but the Medrash says that. Okay, so this is what she is. So she says, I am the one who does this. So she's telling Yoav, whatever the issue is over here, this is my forte. I'll help you out. You don't have to destroy the city. Whatever's going on here, this is what she wasn't promoting herself. She was saying, I have a history here. I'm Serach. This is what I do. So tell me what's going on. I'll take care of it for you. And he tells her, and she does. So she displays, perhaps this is her greatest moment yet. She displays her great wisdom and her ability to be the, I guess we'll call it the diplomat, but with her wisdom. Now, it should also be noted that Serach is the daughter of Asher. Asher was known amongst the tribes for producing
beautiful
daughters. Well, not just beautiful.
Yeah. We had wise daughters.
Yeah, I'm saying beautiful means
valuable.
It could be outwardly also, yeah, but inwardly as well. The Gemara tells us that it was common for the Kohen Gadol to be married to a girl from Usher, a woman from Usher. That was commonplace, that Usher's daughters would be the wives of the, not Usher personally, Usher's, the tribe of Usher, mm-hmm, that the women from Usher would be the wives of the Kohanim Gedolim. So the Kohanim Gedolim are, of course, from Levi, from Aaron, mm-hmm, and the wives of the Kohanim Gedolim were often from Usher. Now that's a good shidduch, because you have the Kohanim come from Aaron, who's all about Shalom, and you have, if Serach Bas Asher represents the greatest of all the women of Asher, she is one who brings people together. So it's a good shidduch, the Kohen Gadol and, mm-hmm, Asher's daughters. Yeah.
Could Serach have been alive when Shem was alive? And so
she could not have been alive when Shem was alive. Shem died when Yaakov was 50 years old.
So when Yehuda had the relationship with Tamar, Shem was already dead?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tamar is either Shem's daughter or Shem's descendant, but she is... Right. Okay. That's right. Now, Aver, I'm not sure exactly when Aver died. I don't remember exactly when Aver died. So, okay, but Shem would have died before any of the tribes were born. Yeah. Before Yaakov married. Now, what is the halachic result of all of this? So the Gemara tells us that, so she managed to save this city. But was this halachically permitted? It must have been, because she didn't do anything that was prohibited. Is this permitted if an army comes and surrounds a city or captures a group of people and says, give us one of you to kill, or else we will kill all of you? What is the halacha? Unfortunately, this has happened in our history. So the halacha is, if they say, give us one of you, or we will kill all of you, everybody has to be killed. We're not allowed to give up a person. Better we should be, because then that's doing it actively. Better we should be passive and let them kill all of us, rather than give over any one of us to them. If someone wants to volunteer to be the karban, to be the sacrifice, the Gemara says that person gets a huge zchus, a huge merit, but no one can force anyone to do that. But that is all only if they say, give us one of you. What if they say, give us so-and-so? They specify the person. What if they specify the person? Give us so-and-so, or else we will kill all of you. So now the Gemara says, well, we have the example of Serach Bas Asher. Serach Bas Asher, here, Yoav said, give me Sheva ben Bichri. If you give me Sheva ben Bichri, I'll let you all go. And she said, I'll hand you his head. So you see that if the person is specified, then you can give him over. But there is a debate. Now, before I mention the debate, I'll just mention to you, first of all, this is only true if all of them, including that one person, is in danger. meaning that the choice is, let's say there are 100 people here, and one of them is the person they specify. So there's Plony and 99 other people. All 100 will be killed. They say, give us Plony, or we'll kill all 100, including Plony. Then they are allowed to give over Plony. But if it is that you've got 99 people here and Plony there, they can't get their hands on Plony. But the 99 people can. And they say, we're going to kill all 99 of you unless you get your hands on Plony and give him over to us. Then they can't do it. Then they can't go get Plony. Because Plony's life is not in danger right now. You can't save yourself with somebody else's life. That you can't do. Not allowed. Ain't dochen nefesh me from nefesh. You don't push off one soul for another soul. You're not allowed to save yourself by killing somebody else or having someone else killed. That you can't do. So here, the reason why Serach was able to do this is because Sheva ben Bichri was part of the group. He would have been killed as well. The whole city would have been killed, including Sheva ben Bichri. And he was named. He was singled out. Therefore, she knew that they were able to kill him and save themselves. But the debate is the following. One opinion in the Gemara says that this is true no matter what. If they specify a particular person, then we are allowed to give that person over to be killed to save the rest of us. The other opinion says, no. That's only if the other person is anyway chayav misa, is anyway liable for death, like Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri wasn't innocent. He was really liable to be put to death. So therefore, in a case where he's liable to be put to death, even if we're not normally empowered to put him to death, then you can give him over, but otherwise not. So let me give you a practical example. So it's World War II, and the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, surround the city of Jews, and they say to the Jews, we will kill all of you unless you give us Plony. If you give us Plony, we'll leave you alone. I don't know if you can trust them, but that's what they say. So assuming that it's true, they'll let them go. We'll let you all go. We'll put you on a train. We'll get you out of here. But you got to give us Plony. So according to one opinion, we can give them Plony. According to the other opinion, only if Plony is anyway chayav misa. Now, we may not have been able to put him to death because we don't kill people these days. We don't have a court system that is able to put anybody to death. But if Plony has done something for which, had there been a Sanhedrin, they would have put him to death, then we can give him over. That's what the second opinion is. So we have two opinions in the Gemara over how to understand this story. Is it because Sheva ben Bichri was named, or is it that not only was he named, but he also was a person who was liable to be put to death, which would limit the case. It would mean there would have to be something where the person was not just named, but also a person who did something for which the Sanhedrin would put him to death. The Gemara then goes on to illustrate that there were cases like this. Unfortunately, there were cases where people were where cities were surrounded and singled out. People were singled out, and they had to decide whether to give them over or not. And it was based on this story of Sheva ben Bichri and Serach bas Asher. So the language of the Chazal, of our sages, according to the second opinion, is if he's chayav misa like Sheva ben Bichri, because Sheva ben Bichri, then you can do it. So Sheva ben Bichri becomes a name associated with a halacha. It's a little bit, it's a name that's in infamy, right? But it becomes associated with the halacha. We do have other cases like that where a person is associated with a halacha due to an unfortunate behavior. For instance, I think I told you this at the time, that if a person is drunk to a point that they don't know what's going on, that has halachic implications. And that level of drunkenness is called kishichruso shel lot. Like the drunkenness of lot. So forever, lot is emblazoned in the halacha as shichruso shel lot, the drunkenness of lot. Unfortunately, Nebuch, that's how he's there for posterity. Because he did something, that's how he gets remembered.
so that you have that. That so here, Sheva ben Bichri is remembered as the one, that's the level of liability a person would have to have in order to be handed over to be killed to save the rest of the city.
In the case of the volunteer, why do we not say that a person is not allowed to put himself into a dangerous situation?
So normally you can't, but over here we're talking about where they're definitely all going to get killed. Where there's no question they're all going to get killed, there's no way out, no obvious way out. It's, then a person is allowed to give themselves up to save everybody else.
Is there any discussion about, as you said, if we can believe, you know, the threat, is there any discussion about how believable the threat has to be? Or we just take the enemy at his word that he is going to infect?
Well, I think you have to have some sense that they're going to keep their word. You know, with Yoav, you knew he was going to keep his word.
Right,
so you have to have some sense.
Exactly.
I think you have to have some sense they're going to keep their word. I think you do have to have some sense before you can take liberties like that. You have to have some, you know, some sense of that idea. Yeah.
Would that halacha apply today, like the last Muhammad that was in Gaza, where there was a young man who deliberately threw himself on a grenade and therefore saved his unit?
Yeah, that would be an example of someone who voluntarily did that. You don't have to. A person's not required to do that. But if they're all going to die anyway, he is allowed to do that. And it's considered to be of the greatest chusam a person could have.
So would we call a person like that kadosh?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
He goes straight to Ghanaian.
Yeah.
So is there a conclusion? There's a debate. I think
the Rambam says that he has to be liable, like Sheva ben Bichri. I think that's what the Rambam says. But I don't remember, because the opinion that says you don't have to be like Sheva ben Bichri is the opinion of Rav Yochanan, and we usually rule like Rav Yochanan. So I don't know how we conclude with that.
Also, so this what the midrash was going through, she's saying first 50 or 10 or 5, whatever it is. So that really wouldn't have been permitted according to what you said. She was just playing.
They
might have done it, but they really weren't allowed to do it. There.
But they didn't know the halacha in the first place. As if they would have known the halacha, then
it wouldn't work.
Right? Then they could have saved themselves just with. You could have started with Sheva ben Bichri. The wisdom, the Medrash says that she even knew the halacha. How many people know that halacha? Right? Yeah. It's not like things that happen every day, most people are expected to know. Yeah. So, right? So we all know the rule, most rules about the basic rules of kosher, right? We all know the basic rules of Shabbos. But something which comes up once every 10 years, once every 12 years, once every 15 years, who knows it? Like, you know, because it's not something you come across all the time. But she knew it. She knew it. And she knew it, not only she knew it enough to be able to deal with it. It wasn't theoretical. She was able to put it into practice.
So we don't derive the halacha, we learn the halacha.
I mean,
the halacha pre-existed.
Yes, you can't, right, no halacha can be created in the Navi. Right. It is, she is revealing to us something that's in the Torah itself. That's right. Now, these are all dramatic cases of war and surrounding and all that. You could have cases that are much more, that appear to be much more benign, that could fit these sorts of cases. It's hard to think of an actual practical case, but you could have things which involve medicine, you know, sicknesses, infections.
Like what?
I'm trying to think of a way to apply it in something where it involves something like that.
But when there's a limited amount of antitoxin?
Well, that may be different, because there's a different gemara that comes into play, which is that if two people are in the desert and there's only enough water for one of them, the one who has it is not supposed to share it, because it's his water. He's got it, and right now he has the ability to save himself, and if he shares it with the other person, they're both going to die. So he's not supposed to share it. So you have another thing that comes into play over there, because there that one person has the antidote and the other one does not.
Are you talking about organ transplant? You're trying to find people?
Well, we're going to talk about that, Mitzvah Hashem, next week when we get to we're going to see next week, Mitzvah Hashem, with the end of this parak of Ira Hayiri. So we'll get to that, Mitzvah Hashem.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, And if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.